Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of episode 46, we're getting closer to 50, which is quite exciting for me, but to episode 46 is John Delek. John, thanks for being here. Super excited to have you.
Joe, thank you for having me. It's taken us a while to connect. I'm finally glad we were able to make it happen.
Absolutely. John was referred kind of to Chats with Clark by a mutual friend of ours named Tim, so I'll let John take the wheel from here, but Tim, we appreciate you making this happen. John, give us a little bit of the intro, kind of let us know who you are, what you're about, and maybe what you're into.
My name is John Delek. What I'm about is I have a personal mission to help people struggling with mental illness. Why that's my mission is because I struggled with my mental illness for such a long time. I was first diagnosed in seventh grade with depression, anxiety, and I remember walking in to see my psychiatrist, and he said, John, take this medication and it's gonna make you feel better. And I was like, okay. And I said, how long do I have to take it for?
Sure.
He said, the rest of your life. And right then and there, I thought to myself, holy cow, I'm gonna feel this way the rest of my life. And the only thing I can do about it is take a medicine.
Sure.
And, you know, that was the beginning of a long journey battling my mental illness, demons. I call them all kind of different names.
Okay.
But that's, you know, where I'm at today. And I'm on a personal mission to continue to help those people and just be a light in a dark place.
That's great. Yeah. People that need it the most, right? I mean, people that are kind of down on themselves really need someone to lighten the way, if you will, like show them that there is that light.
100%, you know, because that's what was done for me. I struggled to find a way out. And I've been to psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, therapists, you know, you name it, I've probably received that service. And I was never real receptive when I was there, because when I'm talking to these doctors and these therapists and all these people with all these crazy credentials after their name, I didn't feel like they could really understand what it was like for me to go through what I was going through at that time.
Got it. So they had like the book response, but you needed the person response almost.
100%.
John, it's kind of, I'm struck by your first story because, first of all, it's very wise in seventh grade to pick up on the fact that like them saying, that the doctor saying, hey, just take this, it'll make you feel better. A, it doesn't address you at all. It really just kind of masks everything, number one. But number two, also the longevity of it, that this is something that, oh, at such a young age, we already know this is going to be for eons to come for the rest of your life. Like that's great wisdom. It strikes me because where is the potential growth and where is the potential betterness, the brightness, the light in that story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And you know, the light eventually comes. It always does. I think, I'm sure you've seen The Dark Knight.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the darkest day is always before the brightest dawn. And that's something that I've hung to on my worst days and still hang on to because, you know, life is a roller coaster. It's up and down. And when I take a step back and look at the growth over all the years, I continue to see, you know, the stock price is rising.
Sure.
But, you know, if I'm watching it day to day, that's fluctuating and, you know, it's not a smooth sailing every day.
Yeah. Now, John, why is that your mission? Why do you feel like that's your purpose? Because as humans, right, we have so many facets to us. And for some people, maybe that's just part of who they are and it's not maybe what their purpose is. But for you, like you feel like that's your driving purpose. Why is that the overlying purpose for you?
You know, it's just accumulative of all my lived experiences. I didn't really know why I was here on this earth. You know, that was something I struggled with at an early age. Like, you know, why am I here? What am I supposed to do? Because to be quite honest, early on when I was in grade school, I knew that wasn't it. I hated waking up, going to school for 8 hours, and then coming home and having to do 4 or 5 hours of homework. Played sports growing up, so then you know you have 2 hours of practice. And at the end of the day, I'm left with chump change, essentially, of free time. And I wanted to have more free time to do what I really want to do in life.
I like it. And how have you found now, having gone through that experience, talking about it on the other side, that you're doing that?
You know, it's something that I'm continually finding out. And I have to stay open-minded to exploring new things. You know, things that I do today that really kind of fill my life. I'm very passionate about working out. for my physical and mental health. I've noticed when I'm working out, I feel good physically, but also there's a direct correlation to how I'm feeling mentally.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So that's a very important piece for me. I love sports. I still play soccer to this day in a couple pickup leagues.
Nice.
And, you know, my love right now is sand volleyball.
Okay.
I just, you know, there's something about being on the sand, living here in beautiful Cleveland during the summertime.
That's true.
Just got to enjoy it.
And you're a tall guy. I mean, that kind of helps, right?
Oh, I'll do some damage up there on the net. You can bet on that.
Get on that front line. That's look out, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
John, what does a day-to-day look like? What is work for you? How does that intertwine?
So routine's a very important piece of my life. And to be quite honest, right now, I'm in a transition.
Okay.
I'm finishing up grad school. I've been working on my MBA at Cleveland State University.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. All of my classes have been online, and which I needed that flexibility because I also work. My day usually starts, I wake up at like 6:50, and the first thing I do is, you know, I roll out of bed and I hit my knees and I pray. I have a relationship with God. I always have. There was a time I felt like He didn't want anything to do with me because of things that I've done in my past. But I know that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And every day I wake up and I just ask God a couple of things. It's first to watch over my friends and family. Two, to give me the strength and wisdom I need for the day. And three, to help me have a positive impact.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of humility in all three of those, right? You want the people you love to be taken care of, and you want to be a beacon for however God needs you to be that day.
Absolutely. You know, and what I found out is, like, you know, whenever I pray, you know, trust me, when I was younger, I would pray, I want to be a millionaire. I want to have a nice car. You know, God, please give me a real beautiful girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I still want all of those things.
Yeah.
But selfish prayers have never worked for me. But when I pray for God's will to be done in my life, it is.
That's amazing. So to continue with your routine a little bit, so you hit your knees, you pray, and where does the day go?
The day rolls into, immediately I'm rolling off to the gym.
Okay.
I like my morning workouts, start the day strong. I'm usually there by 8 a.m., home by 9:30, 10, and then shower, eat some breakfast, and my day is usually going by 11.
Got it. And then do you head into work, or do you?
So I work from home.
It's all
remote. Okay. Yeah, it's all remote. I try to squeeze in as many in-person meetings as I can. Mm-hmm. Zoom fatigue is at an all-time high for me. Sitting and talking to a computer just really doesn't do it for me.
Sure.
There's something about these in-person interactions. You can't beat it.
Yeah.
And so either I'm working from home, or I'm out in the community, running around and meeting with different partner organizations, working on different programs we have, and checking in, you know, making sure the deliverables are met. I usually wrap up around 4 o'clock, and at that time, take a breather, try to get something to eat, work on a little schoolwork for my MBA, and then once the evening rolls around, I have either volleyball or soccer.
Nice. It's a great day. You got a lot jammed in there. It's perfect.
I like to stay moving.
Yeah. It keeps you going, right? It's like when the body's moving, the brain's going, everything's more harmonious, it seems like. Those days, you know, it's like, it's funny, those rest days, multiple rest days in a row seem to be sometimes the most tiring. It's like, why do I feel so much lethargy, right?
Absolutely. And it's like, it's funny because I feel like in my mind, I never get enough rest days.
Okay.
Like if I could have a day where I'm just sitting home doing nothing, I want that.
Yeah.
But I know that's not good for me. If I'm not in motion, I'm saying I'm doing something every day and every minute of the day because that will just burn me out. And my mom used to always tell me growing up, John, you burn the candle at both ends. Mm-hmm. You need to learn how to rest, take some time for yourself. That's something I'm still working on today, to be honest.
Yeah, I get that.
But at the same time, I feel like if I just stop moving, I'm not working on my goals and progressing. It's like quicksand, and I just start sinking in there. And eventually, the more I'm just staying stagnant, the harder it is for me to pull myself out of that.
What do you do at work? What is your company? You're talking about different programs that you're working with. What is it? Give us the overview a little bit.
So I'm a program manager at an organization called Youth Move Ohio. We're a statewide leadership and advocacy organization, and we work with youth serving systems throughout the state of Ohio. So basically what a youth serving system is any system that's providing social services to youth and young adults across the state. That can vary from mental health and addiction services, youth battling homelessness, or youth in the criminal justice system, wow, just to name a few.
Yeah, it's amazing. How did you end up involved with that?
The real answer is God led me to it.
Okay.
I fell right into it.
Huh. It's always how it goes, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. You know, my plan is inferior to God's plan.
Sure.
And I need to be reminded of that on a daily basis, because I like to take the wheel and start driving the car, but, you know, when I let go of the wheel and let it all go into God's hands, that's when things really are flowing for me. And so, I'm sorry, what was your question again?
I was just kind of asking you how you got into that realm and what led you there.
So, back in 2017, I was certified in something called peer support. It's an evidence-based practice that utilizes lived experience to support other individuals going through similar battles that is relatable to my lived experience.
Got it.
It's a Medicaid billable service, and it's actually a service that profoundly changed the trajectory of my life.
Wow. So how do you become peer support certified?
It is a 40-hour in-person training.
Okay.
Along with 16 hours of online self-paced learning through eBased Academy. And after taking all of that, there is a exam that you have to take, as well as a BCI and FBI background check, and which can be scary. To be completely transparent, I have a criminal record.
Okay.
A felony, I have a federal charge, we can get into all that. I'm happy to talk about it. But honestly, you know, having that scared me. You know, I applied for jobs, I was always rejected. When you have to check the box that you're a felon, you know, people don't even give you a call back.
Sure.
They see that my resume was going in the trash can time and time again. I started to get very discouraged. And I felt like I'm not gonna be able to make a living and what is going to become of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard about peer support, and the lived experience piece is what stood out to me, because instead of people judging me for the experiences and labels that, you know, I've accumulated on this journey, people actually valued that. And so I took that training. I started working at an agency in my hometown of Youngstown, Ohio. And I immediately started working with other youth and young adults that were battling things that at that time, I had overcome.
Wow, yeah. That's powerful. I mean, that's what you need. You need, again, that light. So that gave you that opportunity, it sounds like.
It did. Yeah. And so providing that service, I was working at the agency for a couple of years. Youth Move Ohio ended up finding me. Again, another God intervention. And I was at a conference, and they said, hey, you know, we hear you're doing peer support. We're trying to work on creating a statewide youth peer support curriculum, because at the time there was only what was called the peer support. So it was specifically tailored for adults, and working in the youth and young adult space, there was a lot of things that need to be included in the youth and young adult training for the systems of care, which is all of those youth serving systems that I described. And so we advocated, Youth Move Ohio said, hey, come work with us. We started advocating, and in 2020, we created Ohio's first youth peer support curriculum.
Congrats.
Thank you.
You guys had an integral role with that.
I did. You know, I was able to use my experience providing peer services to help inform them on what needed to be included in that training.
And then, so now that they have that, what kind of doors did that open up since 2020?
Several doors. The biggest thing is it's providing other people that have been in similar shoes as myself an opportunity to transmute the shame and the pain that comes with all those labels, from mental health, being homeless, foster care,
mm-hmm.
and using that lived experience to empower other people to live fulfilling lives. A lot of my work right now is on developing that workforce. We're trying to find innovative and creative ways to do that. My favorite way right now is with a partnership we have with the Ohio Department of Youth Services.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know, the Ohio Department of Youth Services is the criminal justice system for youth and young adults. For an adult, they'll go to Department of Corrections, which is state prison. Department of Youth Services is juvenile corrections. And we started this pilot program last year where we're working with youth that have 60 to 90 days left in their sentence and are preparing to come home back to the community, which in my own experience is an overwhelming transition to say the very least.
Okay. Going back.
Going back.
Okay, yeah.
And so I get to go in, you know, I'm peer support certified, you know, lived experience, so you know I got my jacket, you know. And so I go in and we just start talking. And I'm like, what are some of your goals when you come home? And a lot of the things I hear, you know, I want to get a driver's license, I want to get a job, you know, I want to get this community service done. And we start creating a plan on how to support them to accomplish those goals. Nice. Other things we do is we have a leadership and empowerment curriculum. And so we'll go in and we'll start talking about the basics of leadership, like what is a leader? How do you be a leader? What's the difference between a good leader and a bad leader? And we start opening the door for these types of discussions, because the thing that I've seen, a lot of these youth have leadership skills. You know, they're natural born leaders.
Yeah.
But no one's ever empowered them to tap into that in a positive way.
I mean, it's the same thing with, like, to use your Dark Knight analogy, right? Like, the whole idea is, like, people can either go with the good or go with the bad, and simple decisions don't make the innate qualities any different. It's just the decision that took it one way or the other.
Absolutely.
The quality, that driver personality almost is a lot of times still there.
And it comes down to a decision. Yeah. You know, it's what decision do I want to make? And for a long time, I thought I was just a terrible decision maker. And coming back to how peer support affected my life, I actually had a peer support specialist in my life that said, you know, John, you actually are a terrible decision maker. Look at your track record.
Yeah.
You know, people that make good decisions don't end up where you've been.
Sure.
But the thing is, it's not what happens to you, it's how you respond to it. And he gave me a really simple formula for making decisions moving forward from that point. And there's four things. He called them the four absolutes. And whenever I'm making a decision, I make sure, is this decision loving? Is it kind? Is it pure? And is it unselfish? And if I can check all those boxes, I know I'm making the right decision.
Has that become almost second nature to you now, like running through that?
It is.
Yeah. I could imagine, like, when you're not thinking about it, that it would just become something that's very natural to you after repetition of it.
And it's just the repetition, you know? But I needed that to help make myself, you know, make good decisions in my life. And then he started talking to me about, you know, so what are your values? What are your morals? And I said, well, I honestly don't know what any of that is, you know. And he said, well, let me make it real easy for you. You know, your values provide you with your direction, and your morals are how you get there. So for example, one of my values, my top value, of course, in life is to always have a good relationship with God. You know, that's easier said than done on different days. There are days I get mad at God. There are days I don't want to talk because I feel like things aren't going my way. But so how do I do that? And one of the main things is, you know, I said I pray in the morning. When I make decisions, I incorporate these four absolutes. And I do my best to just not think about myself so much and really think about what can I do, you know, in this situation, what can I contribute to my friends, and get outside of my own head, because that's really the root of all my problems come from. When I'm stuck in here, I'm thinking about myself, I'm thinking about my problems, I'm not thinking about any solutions, I'm not thinking about love, what can I do to be of service, so on and so forth.
Yeah, we get so caught up in ourselves, you know, and then it's just a rat race of what can we do for ourselves next, and then it just keeps going. You pawn it off to the next thing, and I'm pawning off to the next thing, and it's cyclical.
You know, exactly, and then it's like, by the end of that, I'm an anxious freaking mess, and I don't have the energy to do what I need to do at that point because I'm so burnt out from just spinning my wheels inside of my head.
Now, this person in your life clearly influenced you to do basically the same work now for others. When you go in and are meeting with people who are in these instances, how do you bridge the gap from the guy in the coat to where they are?
So, you know, that's a really good question. most of the time I'm not the guy in the coat.
Okay.
So I have, you know, my professional side, but when I'm going in there, I'm just going in as John, you know, program manager, MBA student, entrepreneur, all that stuff goes out the window. And I'm just going in and, you know, the first meeting is usually, what's up guys, you know, my name is John. And I give him a brief rundown, just like I'm done with you today, of some of the stuff that I've been through. And usually they'll test me because I know from my own experience being in the system, a lot of people come in, they say they want to help and they'll be there for a little bit and then you never hear from them again.
Sure.
And after a while of people saying that and doing that, you know, you stop listening to what people say and you have to watch what they do. And so that first meeting, they don't usually trust me. They're going to be watching me. And so my most important thing I do is I make sure I'm consistent. I say I'm going to be there every Wednesday at 10 a.m. for this group with them. I make sure I'm there. If they ask me for, hey, can you print off papers on how to get my license and maybe like a practice test? They ask me that 1 week, I make sure I have it for them next week. And it's just following through on those little things, and eventually trust is built, relationship is built. And I try to incorporate some fun into this all as well. I don't know if you're familiar with the game of spades.
Okay.
So it's just a card game, really common in jail. I've had my own fair share of taking losses and beating some people up in it. And we'll play some spades at the end of our session or some other card games. And it's in those interactions where I see barriers and walls dropping down.
Sure.
You know, we're playing a game, but we're having some dialogue. This is usually the point in time when they start asking me some more personal questions about, you know, how did you stay out of fights? Or did you ever get into any fights? Did you ever go to the shoe, which is essentially going into the hole or a solitary confinement? I answer all those questions for them. They start to get to know me. I start asking them some questions. And by the end of that, you know, the relationship is starting to be built. They're ready to re-enter the community because 60 to 90 days has gone. And now they know I'm there for them when they need someone, because in the institution, it's a really controlled environment. You know, they run your routine. You eat lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner at a certain time. You know, you always know if you're working on your GED, you have class from such and such time. And so, you know, routine is just instilled. When you come home, that was all on me. You know, if I wanted to continue to have a routine, or am I just gonna stay up all night playing video games,
right,
wake up at whatever time, you know, not do what I need to do for my parole officer, et cetera, et cetera. And so I check in on them, make sure they're doing what they need to do. I'm never telling anybody what to do though.
Yeah.
The example that I set is the same example that was set for me, and it's, if you want what I have, do what I do. And that's it. You know, I'm never out here telling people this is what you need to do. Because people tell me what I need to all the time, I never listened.
Yeah. It's too standoffish, right? It's like, oh, the end all be all, like, you know all kind of thing. And no one ever appreciates that, right? It's always like that kid in class that was mad when they got one wrong on the test. And you're like, you're the worst, right? It's the same type of idea. So it makes sense. It's far more humble. It's far more compassionate to just be like, I'm here for you. How do you build a relationship? Be care for the person. And then, of course, those thoughts are natural. It's like, oh, actually, I want to be more like John. So then it's a seamless transition that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's exactly, like I said, it was the example that was set for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going in there, you know, talking about, oh, I've got, you know, about to get a master's degree, you know, starting my own company, yada, yada, yada. I'm going in there and they see, like, you know, I have peace today. And if I were to show you pictures of me back in the day, if I were to show you mugshots, you would tell just by looking at my face, you know, that kid doesn't have any peace. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you recognize it in other people as well. You just can tell when someone is just genuinely happy with their life.
For sure.
And that is the thing that I always wanted, because I never felt that for such a long time. And there was a time I never thought I would ever get to feel that way.
It's amazing. Well, congratulations on the journey and the progress. You know, that's amazing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. John, throughout all of it, there's two themes. Number one, you've clearly been hurt And that's driven a lot of your decisions. But number two, and I think the most important part of it is that, like you said, how you've responded to it. All of your responses have been oriented around other people. And you know, I mean, part of that is you have to be in a good spot. That's right, the candle without any wax isn't gonna burn. So you have to be in a good spot. But it's all about other people. As you look towards future days, how do you see it developing for you? How do you see it touching more people? Do you see this being this is where you wanna be and keep going? Or do you see other pathways maybe unveiling themselves to you?
Right now I'm continuing on,
yeah.
You know, the path that I'm on. I'm currently trying to expand that, you know, so I can reach more youth and young adults because I can't be everywhere at once.
So that's where I was kind of curious.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so passionate about developing the workforce for peer support, because I can't be everywhere at once and I don't have the lived experience that, you know, may connect with some people. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that there's someone struggling out there right now that I may not be able to help, but there's someone else in this world that's been through that and overcome that, that is in a position to help that person. And so my goal is to help more people get certified in peer support and help those people out.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, one way that I'm currently doing that is I've been developing my own company. We've been developing a HIPAA-compliant mobile application that connects people seeking mental health services with certified peer support specialists.
That's incredible. Tell us about it. What's the name? Give us the rundown.
The name of it is Share and Solve.
Share and Solve. Mm-hmm. Love it.
And the idea came actually over COVID.
Okay.
I was working with my youth move group, and you know, we were saying that there are some real barriers for youth and young adults to receive care at this time. And one of the biggest ones was people weren't able to go to brick and mortar establishments. So telehealth was really hitting the scene, but it didn't transfer over into the peer support space.
Okay.
And additionally, when it comes to peer support, goal setting is a very important piece of that. And so in this app, we have the ability to meet virtually. There's able to chat messages. It's all encrypted end to end. Additionally, we have resource sharing. So some of the guys that are from the juvenile justice program that I described, once they're released, they still ask me like, hey, you know, how do I get my license? How do I get my social security card? And they're dispersed throughout the state of Ohio. I'm located here in Cleveland. And so I'm able to upload these documents for them. And really these documents are me going on, you know, what is it? Microsoft Word, typing out the steps that I took, referencing, you know, websites to make sure everything's still correct, and then sharing that with them. And they'll see that, start going through the processes, we'll set a goal in the app, get driver's license, and we have all the steps you need to take to accomplish that. I'm able to keep up with their progress in real time. If they're struggling with something or need some extra support, they're able to message me, or they're able to call and video chat with me in real time.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it really is. It's really goal-oriented, which is so important and so cool. And it's also kind of like a calendar in its own way, or like a, maybe like a checklist or like a to-do list. And you have all the resources at your fingertips. That's quite impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah. What are some of the next steps for Share and Solve? Like, where do you want it to go to make it what you envision?
So my vision at the end of the day is I want to be able to staff peer support specialists and have them connect with anybody that wants to receive mental health services across the United States.
Cool.
So any youth, young adult, or person for that matter struggling, they can just go download Share and Solve, enter in, I'm struggling with my depression, I've overcome, you know, these battles in my life, and this is the type of lived experience I have. We will connect them based on their answers with someone that fits that criteria. And then the lived experience component will come into play and that person will be supported and, you know, recovery is possible when they begin that journey.
Yeah.
And
nice.
We're not there yet. We're in the very, very beginning stages, and to be quite honest, it's an overwhelming process right now. We're wrapping up with app development. We've tested the beta. We've had a couple pilot programs with it. using a low fidelity model. And now I'm just rolling into my first true deployment opportunity that's going to start July 1st. And I'm very excited because, and I'm humbled because the organization that I'm partnering with is actually paying me for this.
Wow.
So I'm honored that they do see value in it.
Yeah.
And it's really reaffirming because it took us a long time to connect. And to be honest, I wanted to connect much sooner. But when we first started talking in January, I was really going through it. I was struggling. I'm like, with doubt and fear. I'm like, is this going to work? Is this worth it? I was waking up at like 3-4 in the morning, and I wouldn't be able to get back to sleep because my brain was just running, analyzing different scenarios. And of course, none of it was positive or constructive. And I was really just having a tough time there and really battling, like, is this something I want to continue with, or should I just say forget about it, you know, finish my MBA? I've got 5 years experience in program management, and then just try to find a job that pays more. But that's not in alignment with my personal mission. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, the battle gets toughest when victory is the closest.
Of course. Yeah, it's true. It's those final miles, you know, that last 100 meters on the track that gets you.
Absolutely. And if I got to pull myself like army crawl to the finish line, by gosh, I'm going to do it.
That's the motivation you need. That's the discipline that you need. That's great, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. It's really an incredible journey. It sounds very thorough as it is already. That's why, I mean, it makes sense to me that someone's willing to pay for it as is, because it sounds quite innovative. Is there anything like it in the market? Like, what are you up against?
So there's some similar things. The real differentiating factor between Share and Solve and other peer-to-peer apps in the space, the other peer-to-peer apps are mostly anonymous. Mm-hmm. And while I can see the value in that, it is not a long-term connection. And it really boils down to a difference in philosophy of how peer support should be provided as a service. My philosophy is peer support is not just, you know, going and talking to someone for a couple weeks and then thinking, oh, I'm all better, and then never talk to that person again. Like I described with how I'm working with these young men coming out of juvenile detention,
right.
I'm with them for the long haul. You know, they'll meet them while they're in the facility. I'm working with them outside of the facility. We're going grabbing lunch. We're going to Cavs games. And I'm staying in touch with them throughout the entire process. I'm still in touch with the first individual that I provided peer support to back in 2017.
Yeah, wow.
And that's, you know, it's a long-term commitment. These other apps, you talk to someone, you may have similar experience, you don't really know who you're talking to. And, you know, then the next time you're on, you're getting connected with somebody new.
Yeah, it's like the Omegle for peer support.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And while there is benefit to that, yeah. You know, my philosophy in peer support is just different than that.
Yeah, the consistency is not there. For sure, that's a missing, that's a great accolade that you guys would tout, you know, is that consistency. And you need that because these are, again, vulnerable individuals in a tough spot in their life. So they don't need more fickle natured things almost.
Yeah, they need someone that's just, they can count on.
Yeah, absolutely. John, in your life, who are some of the influences that you've encountered, whether you know the people, whether you don't know the person, big or small, who are some of the most influential people in your life? You've talked about the one who gave you your peer support.
He is, you know, extremely influential in my life. And the only person that is more influential than that individual is my mom. My mom has always been there for me. And in the days that I didn't want to continue putting one foot in front of the other, she would say, John, get out of bed. You need to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And she is harsh, blunt, but loving. And for me, she doesn't sugarcoat anything. So put it in perspective in a real kind of comical way. When I was first beginning my recovery journey, I was skinny fat. Had a nice little gut on me because my diet was trash at the time. I ate a lot of fast food. And whenever, you know, I had my shirt off or was going to go swimming or something, my mom would poke me right in my stomach and say, what is that? And it's harsh, it's addressing the fact, but, you know, the message was received, like, you know, I'm not taking good care of myself.
Yeah.
And she's always done that. She's always held me accountable, but encouraged me to continue putting one foot in front of the other and empowering me along the way. She herself is a leader. You know, I've grown up going to the office with her, seeing how she conducts herself. She's overcome tremendous adversity herself. And my dad is also another influential figure. He has gone through some crazy stuff, and, you know, not to put his story out there, but he was adopted at a young age into a very loving family, but, you know, they were very poor. His dad died when he was 21, and my dad had to step up and take care of my grandma and my aunt. My dad would work a job at UPS. He'd work the first shift. He was going in at 3 a.m, getting off at, you know, whatever time that shift would end, then go to college, and he was studying to be a chemical engineer.
Ah.
You know, so he put the family on the back. And, you know, that's a real motivating thing for me.
For sure.
And, you know, also there's a little bit of pressure that comes with that because, you know, being a son, I want to make my parents proud.
Yeah.
And to hear, you know, my parents set a pretty high bar. And there was a lot to live up to that. But the thing is, my parents have always encouraged me to be myself. You know, John, you know, they never pushed me to follow in their footsteps and do what they do. They've provided me with different opportunities to explore and always find my own way.
It's incredible. Yeah, hats off to both of them. Those kind of stories are truly touching.
I think it's amazing when people just defy all norms of ours to be and to make ends meet. And I think that is exactly what your dad has done. And of course, your mom and the love that she has shared with you is second to none, it sounds like.
It's also, I think, a testimony to the relationship that you two have, for her to be so blunt, I guess, and for it to be effective, because I think with the fragility maybe that you were going through, that could have been completely ineffective as well, but obviously it wasn't, and I think that's a great, again, testimony to the relationship that the two of you have.
It is. You know, if we didn't have that relationship, to your point, you know, I would not have been receptive to that, and probably would have, anything she said, just...
For sure.
Because I did that with other people. A lot of
yeah,
other
I
people.
Bet, right? I bet. John, kind of a loaded question, but when you look at your life, a question that I always ask is, do you find that you have any regrets?
I don't have any regrets. Everything in my life has been a learning experience. That's not to say that the mistakes I've made in the past, I didn't feel shame for them, didn't feel regret at that time. I'm sure you can imagine, like, my first trip to county jail, I'm like, I regret everything I did. But now, having at least, you know, 12 years of perspective past that point, I can see how this journey that I've been on through life has really equipped me to do the work that I'm doing today.
It's excellent. Yeah, there's either kind of two ways I feel like to look at regret. You know, there's like that where it is that learning experience, because I feel like there's things that all of us have done that we wish that we had not done. And that's just a reality though. There's nothing we can do about it at this point except for move past it or we sulk on it. And so I think people who sulk on it might have regrets and would perhaps look at it that way, but, or it's a missed opportunity. I think there's always that. Like if you don't do something, I think we can regret that. I think we can look back and wish we had done something and been more proactive about whatever the thing is. But the other opportunity is that you look at a situation, even though it may have been difficult and it is a springboard, it's an opportunity, it's a learning experience, much like you just described. And so someone who has been through what you have been through, I think it makes sense to me that you look at it as, you know, this has kind of formed me, this has made me realize different things and has put me in situations now that I'm happy to be in.
I'm grateful for. It is, you know, and I know you talk a lot about the perspective on your podcast. I've had the chance to check out a couple of them, you know, the other podcasts. The one with Natalie Bell really stood out to me. And just perspective is really the game changer, because, you know, I'm thinking about what you said about how I can look at it and have regret for not taking the chance for an opportunity. And there's a story that comes to mind. You know, I loved sports growing up, and I loved soccer. And soccer was my favorite sport in high school. I blew several opportunities with that sport. Not like I was gonna go be a college athlete or anything like that, but to just participate, be there with my team, experience that camaraderie, you know, have the fun. I stopped, you know, really being involved with sports in high school because at that time I started self-medicating with different drugs, and that just started to consume my life. And I felt like, you know, damn, I really blew my sports opportunity. And today, you know, I have the opportunity to really look back and reflect on that. Like, you know, I blew this. I didn't go to practice because I wanted to do, you know, take drugs and numb my pain, which I felt shame for at that time. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, I know I'm going to make these commitments to my sports team. You know, it's all intramural, it's all rec, so it's nothing real competitive. But, you know, my team's saying, hey, let's get a practice in, I'm showing up.
Yeah.
I'm showing up early before the game. And I take that pain that I felt from missing that opportunity and really apply all the energy I have into really blowing this new opportunity out of the water.
Yeah, it's a great motivator, right? I mean, Tom Brady, I was just watching the roast. Did you watch his roast?
I have not had a chance to check it out yet. I
highly recommend. And he talks about when he walked into Kraft, he walked into Foxborough the first time, and, you know, he was obviously 199, pick 199, sixth round, and he's like, you know, I'm the best decision your organization's ever made. It's like, that you need that, like it fires them up, you know, and to the same point, if that can motivate you and you funnel that into what you're doing, Lord knows that man worked very hard. That man was incredibly disciplined and incredibly consistent with his workout still to this day. And so that's allowed him to be great at what he does. Mind you, that's his life, but it's the same, like what you do for your intramural soccer, your rec soccer, and those practices is going to translate into what you do in helping develop peer support and helping develop your app and so on and so forth. Like, that's how it works.
It's the mentality, yeah, you know? It's applicable in any realm. I blew my first attempt at college. I got kicked out of college, and I thought it was over with. And, you know, when I finally had an opportunity and got accepted into Cleveland State for undergrad, after a lot of other colleges rejected me and didn't even respond, I knew, like, that's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to take full advantage of everything I can do to make the very best of it. And because, you know, especially like in high school, I was sitting in the back of the class, you know, lollygagging. I'm a big doodler, didn't want to focus, didn't want to do my work. And poor work ethic. But, you know, I was able to learn from all these missed opportunities and, you know, did undergrad, finishing up grad school. And it applies in everything, like you said.
Mm-hmm. It does. And kind of to that end, speaking on the mindsets a little bit, something that I'm real big on is gratitude. And you've mentioned it several times, and you've mentioned the prayer component of your life, and I feel like it all goes very hand in hand. But to be direct, what role does gratitude play in your life?
Gratitude is everything. And I'm still working on how to incorporate gratitude into my life better and better each day. I do not think gratitude is a feeling. Gratitude is very much an action word, and so it boils down to what I do. Ways I can describe that is, you know, kind of like the work I do with youth and young adults. I'm grateful that someone took the time to show me a better way to live my life and get out of the living hell that I thought I was just sentenced to experience the rest of my life. And I show my gratitude by helping other people that are struggling with that now. Not just, you know, in my work setting, but whether it's, you know, I'm at the gym, I'm talking with some people or some friends, or even people that I just met for the first time, and they're telling me, hey, you know, I'm really struggling with this. You know, I really take the time to focus on them and listen to what they're saying and see what I can do to encourage them and support them. I remember during COVID, Cleveland State got, you know, all that funding from, you know, the government to help with the stimulus checks and all of that. And someone told me about it because I was struggling financially at that time. And I said, okay, you know, that's really good to know. Next thing you know, I'm texting like 50 people from my class, sure. Hey, get this money, go to the website and they'll cut you a check.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just, what can I do to share what was given to me and to pass it on?
And you have plenty of experience making relationships, so that's tremendous.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always funny too to look at our lives kind of in hindsight and like to see the different ways that people have influenced it, I think. And throughout all of it, your story is one that's loaded with a lot of influential people, a lot of influential decisions. You know, it's really great, John.
Thank you. No, it good and bad influences, you know, and it's all about having the right picker. And something someone told me early on is watch what people do, not what they say. There are a lot of people that would say, hey, you know, do this, this, and this, but then you see them out in public and you'll always be kind to someone and they're yelling at the person at the cash register.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. It's that hypocrisy that it runs, it's latent in our society. A mentor of mine and I were having a conversation maybe 2 weeks ago, and it shifted towards prayer a little bit. And one of the things that he had said, like when people talk about prayer with him, he's like, you know, I just always show up. He said, ultimately, that's all we can do is just show up. So it ties in with everything that we've talked about. I think I was thinking about it with the intramurals and kind of how that is, or like even on the days when it's probably difficult to get up and go do the thing, or when you're not feeling it, or whatever the case may be, no effectiveness or no goal can be met unless you show up. And so I think that that is awesome that you're doing that all the time. You're showing up for so many people, for yourself, for this, for others, and that speaks. So it's really great.
And it's not easy, you know. It's, I think life really, not life, but there's just like force out there that really tests me to see how committed I am. And for example, with this juvenile justice project, there were days I was going through one of the worst depressions from September, you know, to March, September of last year to March of this year. I was just stuck in this pit to the point where that routine that I had described to you was non-existent. I was up late, sleeping in, didn't want to get out of bed. And a lot of the commitments, you know, that I had, I didn't want to do. But the one thing that I have learned, to your point, it's as long as I show up. And so I'm literally dragging my ass out of bed, driving, you know, to the juvenile correction facility and just making sure I get there. You know, and it applies to everything, you know, even in the gym. I was just talking with my buddy yesterday. We had a long weekend and, you know, we didn't want to go to the gym. We just wanted to spend the day for recovery, to take it easy and prepare for the week ahead. But we were both there in the morning getting a workout in. And for me, it was not a good workout whatsoever. My mind was everywhere but the gym. But the thing is, I still showed up, put some work in, I paid my dues, and I was able to check that off the list for the day.
Right. Yeah. You never know, like from a faith perspective, like God's going to work through you, right? I mean, we always think it's us, and it's never really us, you know? So it's like if we show up, we allow ourselves to open that door for God to work through us in that instance, whether it's bettering ourselves in the gym, whether it's influencing other people, whatever the case may be. So I always think about that. Like, I don't understand why people wouldn't show up. I mean, it takes some effort, but like you're saying, you have to drag yourself out of there, out of bed, out of wherever to do it. The opportunities are endless and the motivation is intrinsic in that to the upside, to reach that upside, to have the upside. So it's so important to just show up. That conversation really stuck with me with that mentor.
I really appreciate you bringing that up because that is just, it's so powerful, you know, and I'm thinking back on how that ties in with like the four absolutes. When I say I'm going to be there for someone and I don't show up, I'm doing them a disservice.
Yeah.
And I'm ultimately making a decision based on how I'm feeling in myself to not be there for someone else. And when we're thinking about the four absolutes, which box isn't that checking? That is not unselfish. That is very selfish of me. Mm-hmm. I don't like to frame it that way all the time because I know the weight of the world is very heavy, you know, and we all have to battle our own demons. But in my own experience, when I find I can put my own problems aside even just for a minute and really just engage with another person and find out what's going on in their life and listen to whatever it is they want to share, my problems seem to get much smaller.
That's it. Yeah, it all falls into place that way.
It's this idea I struggle with when people don't strive for goodness or strive to be great, because a lot of times the argument to not do that is that if you don't have high expectations, you can't be upset, right, when you don't meet them or when someone else doesn't meet them. But where I come from, right, like, it's not about you. It's more than you. It's not that you're not just closing yourself off, but you're spiting everyone else that could have benefited from whatever that greatness was that you were supposed to do. So by not doing that, again, it is more than you. So it's not just about you. So when you say, not you, but you, mm-hmm. Say that it's because you don't want to have their expectations basically crushed, again, that last box, that it's completely selfish. Like it's more than you. It's more than you.
Do you mind if I share a story that Please. Relates to that?
Yeah, of course.
So before peer support, before school, I had just come home from prison and I was working at a deli in Youngstown, Ohio called The Rishas. If you're ever in Youngstown, check it out. Shameless plug, I had to.
I love it.
It's
yeah.
locally owned, family owned. And as soon as you walk in the store, you can feel like this is love. And if anyone, it's Italian, so.
Nice.
Best sandwiches, best capicola, pepperoni's on point. But I was working there. And, I'm just coming home, trying to get reacquainted and feeling the pressures of life. I'm working there, and one day I just really didn't want to go in. I was in this depression again, just shame, guilt, trying to clean up the wreckage of my past and trying to figure out how am I going to do all of this and live a life that, really makes me happy. Didn't want to go. Stayed in bed until the very last minute. And, I feel like God just gave me the power to get out of bed. I rolled out of bed. Got dressed, put a hat on, so I didn't even have time to do my hair, and just showed up. Whole time I'm there in the morning, I'm just like, I don't want to be here. I want to get out of here. I hope they let me go early. And lunch rolls around. I'm working the deli counter. All my other coworkers are on lunch break, and so they're not out in the deli counter. And this lady just walks in, and I could tell she was a little distraught. She placed her order and said, "Hey, is everything okay today?" She said, "I'd be honest with you." She said, "Everything is not okay. My husband just died.
Oh my God.
And just a couple weeks ago, I buried my son from an overdose."
Oh my God.
And, I said, "I'm so sorry to hear that. If there's anything I can do, please let me know." And I said, "I really want to thank you for sharing that with me, because I myself, and at this time, I was probably about 6 months in on my own recovery journey and abstaining from drugs." And I said, "This is like my 6 month day of sobriety here. And, hearing your story, I just appreciate that. And, recovery is possible. Yeah. And I'm here for you. I understand that pain." And she said, "Thank you so much for sharing that with me." She gave me a hug, and it was just like, I didn't want to show up to work that day. Had I not shown up, who knows who that lady would have talked to. And it's not like I'm out here having a big impact on her life through that conversation, but I could tell it touched her. Mm-hmm. I was able to hold some space for her to share what was on her chest. And she knew it landed on ears that were really able to receive her message and hold space for her to share that pain. And it could see a drastic difference in her mood after. And so I was able to do that. And that wasn't anything, I thought was going to happen for work. It's just through showing up, God puts those things in my path where I have the option to be there or not.
Yeah.
And today I'm doing everything in my power to make sure I'm there for everything.
Amen. Yeah, it is. And it's amazing how you show up at the deli and that happens, and of all days too, just the timing's incredible. And it's clearly touched you to this day. You remember, I'm sure you can picture it vividly, right? That's amazing.
And my mood changed after that, not only You know, do I think it helped her? But who knows, maybe God had that happen for me, because after that experience, I was excited the rest of the day. I was smiling, being positive with all the other customers, not, what do you want? How do you want it sliced? Here you go. Yeah. You know, I was really just able to be a higher vibration of myself.
Yeah, I mean, right? It's like, it's always that moment. It's like, who am I to say anything? Like, someone always has that really difficult experience, which I think is real. You know, like, you hear about it, it's like, it's real. It touches you. Because it's like, okay, I'm good. It's like, I'm okay. Yeah.
You know, it could always be worse. And at times, I don't like to say that, because I feel like it does take away from, you know, the very real battles I face and other people may be facing. But after the fact, you know, it really does help provide perspective. Like, you know, it really could be a heck of a lot worse. You know, on my walk here, you know, I just saw so many people struggling on the street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know why God put me in this position and not that one, but I'm grateful to be where I am, because it could always be worse.
Yeah, amen, amen. That's I'm going to be thinking about that story, John, so thanks for sharing that with me and with all of us. That's a crazy one, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, God, always, yeah. John, as we kind of gear towards some finishing thoughts, do you have advice or a piece of thought that you want to share with either the audience abroad or a specific sect of the audience? What's on your mind?
So the one thing that's on my mind, it's just a word of encouragement for anybody going through some hardships right now, and they don't think that the light is at the end of the tunnel. When I was first sentenced to go to federal prison, I was in a federal holding facility in Youngstown, Ohio, and when you go to court, they actually take you on a van all the way up here downtown to the federal courthouse. I thought my life was over. I'm in this van with all these guys, and they're saying, oh, you know, I've been fighting this case for 2 years and haven't even gotten sentenced yet, and, you know, the mandatory time I'm looking at is 56 months. You know, so my life is going to be a long time before I get out. And the other guy said, I'm right there with you, man. You know, and they just hit me with such and such case, and, you know, it's not looking good for me. And then this third guy said, tough times don't last, tough people do. I've been down for 3 years, still waiting to get sentenced, but every day I'm making sure I'm in the law library, learning what I can to help better myself. I'm reading these books. And I heard that guy say that, and that message stuck with me.
Yeah, no doubt. Wow.
Tough times don't last, tough people do. You know, we got to keep putting one foot in front of the other, no matter how hard times get, because it will get better.
It will. Yeah. You hold on to what's good, you know, you do more of what's good and find a way to allow more time for those good things and good people. I think that's essential.
And, you know, being open to receiving them. So.
Amen. John, this has been wonderful. I appreciate your openness and just your wisdom that you've shared with me and just with everyone. Clearly the severity of what we've talked about is tremendous, and it comes from such a place of love and a place of caring for people and wanting everything to be good and for people to be progressing towards a better tomorrow. And I love that. So it's really a pleasure to have been chatting with you, John. I appreciate you being here and just again all your stories and all the insight that you've shared with me.
Thank you for having me today, Joe. It's been a real pleasure. And like I said, man, I'm just glad we're able to finally connect and make this happen.
Amen. Everyone, as you know, I will have all of John's information down in the links or description below. So depending on whether you're listening or watching on YouTube or wherever you may find this, please be sure to check out all that John has going on. And please be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you're not already. This is, again, episode 46 of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off. Thanks for listening.